There's an old story about this Irish priest, and he's going to perform the wedding for an Irish young Irish lady that he knows, and he kind of had a hand a little bit in arranging the marriage, but this couple gets together and they court, and eventually they get married. And the priest blesses the marriage. And a year goes by, and the priest runs into the lady. And he says, "Ah, Jane," he says, "how's that wedding going with her husband, Jack?" And she says, "Ah, Father, it's going really well." See, he said, well, explain a little bit. What do you mean it's going really, really well? She said, "Well, Father, Jack is an answer to my prayers. But he's not the answer I prayed for." You got to love the Irish. So I was thinking of that because I wanted to talk the text today make me think of prayer and how, you know, the question when we pray, like this lady here, Jane, he's an answer to my prayers, but it's not the answer I prayed for. So we believe as Christians that our prayers are always answered. We do believe that. C.S. Lewis, the great Anglican author, used to say that the one great divine power God gave to us and shared with us was the power to pray. It's like God was inviting us into his own power as the Almighty and saying to us, "I cannot accomplish what I want to accomplish without you. You've got to somehow help me pull off what I want to pull off for creation." And your prayers are a symbol of your doing that. It's interesting to think about prayer that way. It's an awesome sharing in the divine reality. And when we do pray, we always have something in mind. We think, surely when we pray, we think, well, this is how it's going to turn out. Because we mistake our understanding of things for God's understanding of things. There's an old saying in Christian theology, God knows us better, is more intimately in tune with the depths of who we are than we are ourselves. That comes from St. Augustine. Since we're talking about Abraham as the father of the Islamic faith as well as the Jewish faith, in the Quran, there's a saying which I've always loved. It says, Allah, by the way, is the Arabic word for El. Elah, the God. And El, we say in Hebrew, El, El Adonai, El Yahweh, and so on, God. Same Hebrew, Arabic, the same language tradition. But in the Quran, there's a text which says, it's from the 50th chapter of the Quran. It says, God is closer to us than our very own jugular vein. That's how well God knows us. So when we pray, we, I think, are being invited to imagine that God knows our needs much better than we do. So that we have one outcome in mind for our prayer, and perhaps that is going to be the outcome of our prayer. But God knows better than we what we need. And the outcome may be, although our working with God and praying with God may be part of the way in which God will bring about the outcome for us, the outcome may take a very different turn in the end from what we had in mind. And it may take a long, long, long time. So we have Hagar here. Some of you may not be all that familiar with Hagar. Abraham, of course, you know, lived in a polygamous culture. So he had concubines, and then he had wives. Sarah was, of course, his major first wife. Hagar was his second, and then he also had a third, Ketura. So if you go back and read the book of Genesis, you'll see a lot of this story about Abraham. He was, of course, going to be the father of great tribes. And in those days, the way you did that is through concubines and through multiple wives. Things have changed radically since then. And you know the story about Sarah. She was barren until very, very late in life. And so Abraham, thinking that he needed to fulfill God's will for him to be the father of many nations, and Sarah being aware of that, Sarah herself actually gave her maiden slave woman to Abraham to take as a surrogate mother for his child, and the child was Ishmael. And then quite a few years later, Isaac is born, and the story here talks about, Isaac and Ishmael got along really well together and were playing together and so on like that. And, of course, Hagar probably thought, for all those years that Sarah was barren, Hagar probably thought, well, she's the deal. She's going to be the chosen wife. She's going to have the place of honor. So she's thinking, She's kind of thinking, this is what God intends for me. Well, in strange ways, God did not intend that for her. Sarah was going to become pregnant herself, give birth to Isaac. And so that you had a kind of a situation there of, rivalry in the family and jealousy and kind of meanness in some ways, by our standards, maybe not by the standards back then. So in other words, you would say, if you look at, you ask Hagar, you would say, well, Ishmael was the answer to your prayers, and your elevation to chief status as the wife was what you think God had in mind for you. Lo and behold, it doesn't seem as if God had that in mind for you. God had something else in mind for you. Something wonderful. Something great. But not something you understood. But you played a very, very important part in it. And the text is giving us a kind of introduction a little bit to that, how she's cast out with her son, Ishmael, into the desert. She's going to, the chances of her surviving in the desert are very slim and grim. And then, of course, the miracle of the water occurs. And Yahweh saying that, yes, even though Ishmael is not going to be the father of the tribe you thought he would be the father of, he will be the father of a great tribe. And the Islamic tradition believes that he is indeed their father. So we're kind of connected. We various Abrahamic religions, but it was kind of a surprise. We didn't expect. The third and last thing I want to mention is the distinction between ego time and soul time. Or if you want, ego reality and soul reality. The ego, we all have an ego, just use that as a kind of symbol for, how we are, rational mind, how we think, how we plan, how we work things out, and so on like that. So, Hagar has her ego mind working. Sarah had her ego mind working because Sarah didn't plan for any of these great things to happen to Ishmael or Hagar either. And that's at work. And so according to the ego mind, you know, when we say a prayer, this is what's supposed to follow. Boom, 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 boom. And usually in our ego mind, things are going to have to follow real fast and real quick because that's how we like things. We don't like to have to wait. We don't like to be dependent upon other people. We want to get things done. Boom, 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 boom. That has its place in our lives. We do need to have something of that in our lives and so on. But then there's the soul time and the soul reality. And the soul time, you know, we're talking here about the reality of love, divine love. Love is a healing balm, a rich source of giving. But it seems to work very subtly, and probably oftentimes it seems to us very slowly. Look at the history of the human race. Why did Jesus only come in the year that he came? Why did so many hundreds of thousands of years pass in the evolution of humanity before Jesus came? Why does it take so long for this love force to emerge clearly in history? And has it emerged yet in the way we would like it to? Soul time, love time, seems to be a much slower but therefore more powerful reality. Like planting, you know, a seed. And we'd like it, we get that seed. I remember as a kid, you know, we'd plant something. My grandmother and I, my Basque grandmother, she used to love green beans, and we would plant the green beans, and I thought maybe the next day they would be all grown, and I couldn't understand why it took so long. We had to get these roots in there. See, and love is like that. It's a slow, but therefore all the more effective power at work. Soul time, soul reality. That's, I think, how prayer works.